Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Robert, one of the tech doctors, back after a bit of a hiatus, I guess you could say. I'm hoping and assuming that my podcasting partner, Allison Hartley, is still around somewhere. Allison, are you there?
Skype and Comcast willing, I am.
Okay. Sounds like Skype is willing at the moment.
Yes, we'll see about Comcast.
All right. One out of two ain't bad.
Yep.
How are you doing? How are things? How have you been?
I've been well, dealing with a bit of a sick puppy over the past week, but he is on the mend, so that's really good. Had some tummy issues that were concerning me for a little bit, but he is feeling a lot better. And we're actually on day two of a three-day weekend, so I'm pretty excited about that. Have some stuff to do tomorrow, but pretty much going to try to build in some more relaxation time. So this is kind of my Saturday. So nice. We're recording on a Sunday, but I don't have that usual, oh God, I have to go to work tomorrow feeling.
You are most fortunate because we don't get President's Day off.
Well, that's a bummer.
So I get to go to work.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
We don't get Columbus Day. They took two holidays away from us, Columbus Day and something else that makes me sad. So
it is odd how these states make these decisions about holidays.
And it makes no sense, but, you know, that's government for you.
You're right. But we do have a spring break coming up in March.
So oh, fun times.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a while and not a huge amount of new news, at least as far as I'm aware. But there have been a few things that have happened with me personally and also few things going on in the news that I thought we might touch base on. I want to talk a little bit, first of all, maybe about some of the Apple accessories that I received over the holiday break. And I would say that I got them for Christmas, but truth be known, and I hate to have to admit this, but I gave them to myself for Christmas.
Oh, you're your own best friend.
My own best friend. Because no one else in my family knows what the heck a thingamajigger that I might want is. So there you go. So the things that I got, which have been kind of interesting, is I got an aluminum lightning dock for my iPhone 6S Plus.
Ooh.
And it's a very small little square piece of aluminum with nothing on the top of it but just a lightning port. And on the back, it has a headphone jack so you can plug headphones or a set of speakers, or what I did, it plugged my Bose radio into the headphone jack. And it also has a female lightning connector, so you just plug your lightning cable into the dock, and of course the other end is plugged into AC power. But it surprised me a little bit that the lightning port would be the thing that holds this iPhone on the dock. I thought, wow, that's a lot of, seemed to me like that was a lot of stress to put on the lightning port on a big old 6S Plus, but it works great. You just slip the phone on the dock, and it's a really long lightning port, if you will, really tall, sitting up there on top of the dock. So I guess it goes as far down into the connector as is possible, but it just sits right up on that dock, and the headphone jack works fine without having anything plugged into the headphone jack on your phone. It just works through the lightning port on the dock, and it's, you know, I wouldn't want to just sit there and push on it or wiggle it around a lot, but if it's just sitting there on the dock, it's just fine. So that's a pretty cool accessory, and it gives you an easy way to have a set of speakers or an auxiliary radio, like in my case, plugged in, and it works really well. So I was happy with my Lightning dock purchase. I don't know whether you've seen one of those or have any experience with those kind of docks or not.
I haven't seen one, but I've sure heard about them, and I'm thinking about picking one up for work because I have so many wires just everywhere at work, and I'm always hunting for the end of my Lightning cable, so I could see it maybe being a good little accessory to have there.
Yeah, because that way your Lightning cable would always stay plugged into it.
And yeah.
So you wouldn't have to do anything other than just set your phone on the dock, plugging it right into that Lightning port, which takes a little bit of getting used to. I had to practice a little bit to know exactly how to get it lined up, but it's doable.
Sounds like the experience I had when I had an off-brand speaker dock, and it was made a little bit more awkward by the fact that I was using a 30-pin to Lightning adapter that had the really short Lightning connector. But this seems like it might be a good solution, and I have some speakers I can hook up to it if I wanted to.
I was just really surprised at how small it is and that that's all there was to it, just that little square of aluminum. Obviously, it's heavy enough that it doesn't slide around on the table and it holds the phone in place. But wow, what a simple solution. It was a little surprising.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah. I'm glad that it works.
Yeah.
So in addition to that, it must have been dock Christmas for me because I got one of the new Apple docks for the Apple Watch. And I've been really happy with it. It just is a round puck kind of thing, sort of has a rubbery feel to it with some almost felt kind of material on top of it. So it's a nice soft place for the watch, but right in the middle of that puck is the actual magnetic connector, just like what comes on the end of the charging cable. And it can either be laying down flat or you can set it so that the charging connector is standing up, so you can plug the watch in sideways essentially on the dock and have it go into nightstand mode. And I don't use nightstand mode per se because I don't actually have my watch charging by my bed. I have it charging in a different room. But in nightstand mode, it makes it really nice for those situations where you have a band like the Milanese Loop, which is not that easy to disconnect. So the watch, you'd have to either disconnect the band or use a different band so the watch could lay flat on the dock. But since you can sit it on there sideways, that works really well. So I'm happy with the Apple Watch dock. Again, it's quite interesting in its simplicity, but it does work.
Well, that's good. I don't know if I'm as excited about potentially buying that because I find it pretty easy to find my connector at work and at home, the little round connector on the end of the cable, maybe because it's a lot longer than my Lightning cable. But who knows? Maybe one day I'll see it and I'll get envious and I'll decide I want it.
Yeah, I don't know that you would necessarily need it. It sounds like you got a good arrangement already set up, and it is rather expensive for what it is.
That's what I recall. How much was it? 49?
I think it's 79.
Oh dear. No, so, not right now. I'm saving up for the rumored new Apple Watch. So
there is always something to save up for.
True that.
It never ends. So the last thing I got was the Milanese Loop, and I know that you have that band also. And
I do.
I'm really liking it. It is very easy to adjust, and it fits me well. and it just seems like a really classy band. I do find that I like to switch to my sports band when I'm getting ready to exercise or go to Pilates, or maybe if I'm going to go out and go for a long walk or something. I don't have to, but I like the sports band in that situation. And it's finally given me a chance to have the experience of really getting good at switching those bands. And Apple did an amazing job with that design, because the bands fit very snugly and securely on the watch, but it's very easy once you learn how to do it to take one band off and put on another band. And I don't really know of too many other watches that you can so easily change the band on. Most of them require a tool or go into a jewelry store or something, but the Apple Watch, it's really easy to change the bands.
Yeah, my next Apple Watch is probably going to actually be the sport, so I imagine that I'll be keeping my Milanese Loop and selling the stainless steel Apple Watch by itself, but I imagine I'll want to switch the bands occasionally, so it'll be fun to see how that works. I've not had occasion to do that yet.
Yeah, because if they stick with the same arrangement, you'll get the fluoroelastomer sports band as part of the sports package. So
yeah,
you'll hopefully end up with both. I'm just really hoping, and I'm assuming it's likely, but really hoping that whatever changes are made to the next version of the watch won't change the way the current bands connect to it.
I hope not either. And I imagine that it wouldn't, because I think Apple realizes that people, whether they bought them off market or through Apple themselves, have in some cases invested a lot of money in some of these bands. And I think that it would be really crappy of them to change it. I don't think they would do that.
It really would be. So I'm guessing that's not going to be the case. Then we got into January and my birthday came along. So I got a pair of a Beats Pill 2 speakers. I think they're called the Beats Pill 2 Plus. And what got me going on this was David Woodbridge was demonstrating his Pill speakers and showing how you could wirelessly pair them and have them be in stereo mode, which is, I think, the next thing that's really coming along. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more wireless earbuds where you can pair each earbud and then have them play in stereo mode with no wires connecting the two earbuds.
That'll be great. I can't wait for that.
And that's what they've done with these Beats Pill speakers. It was kind of interesting because I got mine pretty recently after David got his. It wasn't but a few weeks. But by the time I got mine, they had already discontinued the model that he got. And so I got a different model. And so the Pill speakers that Apple is selling now are, at least as I understand it, a bit heavier and a bit larger than the ones that David got. And also the ones that David was so excited about, and the thing that I was really excited about, was that his model will let you put the speakers in stereo mode by touching them together. They have an NFC chip which lets you do that. But mine doesn't have that. Mine requires you to download an app from the App Store that you run on your phone that lets you do all those things, like put them in stereo mode. And of course, that means you have to buy two of them if you want stereo mode. But it is amazing how good they sound. They are really quite amazing. And they will completely fill up my living room, even though they're these very small, relatively small, pretty fairly heavy. I carried them to work one day in my backpack, and I noticed my backpack was a lot heavier. But they really sound great, and they have plenty of bass, plenty of mid-range. The highs are fine. They sound fine as one speaker, but where they really shine is when you pair them in stereo mode. And I'm surprised how well that works. There's really doing some magic there in the software to get them to separate the stereo channels out like that. And I know some other speakers are doing that now. I saw there's some JBL speakers out that you can set up that way. So it's kind of exciting being big audio person, music person. You know, it's just fun to be able to experiment with some of this brand new technology as it's kind of developing. And I can't wait to see it come down to the earbuds. I think that's going to be great.
That's going to be really awesome. I'm really enjoying my Sonos system still. And I think we talked about it on a previous podcast a little bit. But the Sonos is a smart speaker system. It's a whole range of products that you connect actually to your Wi-Fi network, and it has an app, and through the app, you can access all different kinds of services. Most recently, Apple Music and a lot of Amazon Music services and Pandora and TuneIn Radio and satellite radio and a bunch of other services, RUSC, old time radio. You can access a bunch of services that then allow you to play through the app through these amazing Sonos speakers. And I've done the same thing. I've paired them as a stereo pair, and the setup was extremely easy. It was all accessible. So it's so great that we have a lot of choices in terms of high-end audio now. I like the Sonos over something that might have Bluetooth capability, because with Sonos, if I get a phone call, my music continues to play. I have voiceover still coming through my phone, so that's handy. And that was always something that I really liked previously about AirPlay. So to be able to have just amazing sounds in our living room, just full, rich, like you said, good bass, good highs, good mid-range, good for spoken word, good for music, access to some great speakers. It's so great that we have that many choices now.
Yeah, that's really great. And like you, I have the Sonos bug, and I'm trying to save my pennies, because I went to an audio store the last time I was in Austin and listened to the Sonos speakers, and they really do sound great. And the fact that the app is totally accessible just makes it a no-brainer if you're using voiceover. They're way ahead of where Bose is, for example. Bose has a nice system, but it's not, the app is only somewhat accessible. The Sonos app, at least as I understand it, is completely accessible. And they've been very active, apparently, in making sure that voiceover works well with their app. And that's really encouraging to me.
It is. They've made a real effort over the past, I would say, year and a half at least. It was, the app apparently was always somewhat accessible, but once they realized that there were blind people who were using their apps, they really made a concerted effort to improve and maintain a really high level of accessibility for well over a year.
And I know that they have had a beta for quite a while of Apple Music, which just came out of beta, and I'm assuming from what you've said that that works well and it's no problem.
You can opt in or opt out of the betas kind of as you wish. And it's an open beta testing period. I played with Apple Music quite a bit. I didn't really find any significant bugs worth reporting when I was playing with it. A few little things that I interacted with them on Twitter about, but even the beta was pretty stable, I must say.
And now that it's released, I'm assuming it's really stable.
It is. Yeah, I just updated to the stable version and may continue with the betas depending on what services they add, but also may just stick with the stable version now that they have Apple Music support. The only thing I wish is that somehow we could have Siri integrated into the Sonos, but until they continue to open up the Siri API and if Sonos gets on board with HomeKit, then perhaps we might see it.
Yeah. the one thing that I've heard as somewhat negative, and I don't know whether you've had this experience, I'm curious to know if you have, is that some people have said the Sonos app is a real battery drain on their phones.
I've not noticed that at all. I don't think it drains my battery any more quickly than any other music app or streaming app that I would use.
I'm glad to hear that. I just heard Dave Hamilton say that on the Mac Geek Gab podcast. And so I didn't know whether, you know, you'd experienced that, but that's good that you haven't.
Yeah. I mean, I think it helps that I have a charger like every 5 feet in my house.
So. Yeah. Always keeping that thing charged up.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, that is one of the great things, honestly, about the 6S Plus is the tremendous battery life.
Yeah, it's the main advantage and the main reason that I could never go back, because I like the form factor. I really like the form factor of the 6, but I would never go back to a smaller battery.
Yeah, it's kind of the same with me. It's a little big, a little bit unwieldy at times, but
can be. Yeah,
the trade-off for me has really been more than worth it. I know some people, it just, the size of it just drove them crazy.
And I thought for sure that would be me, because I have small hands, and I just thought for sure that, oh, well, I'll just have to settle for less battery. And the 6 even sounded like at the time, like it was going to be too big and I would just had to have dealt with it. But I compared them, and really, I think because of the balance of the weight of the 6 Plus and more recently the 6S Plus, it's pretty easy to keep a hold of. It's a little on the wide and tall side, but there are trade-offs with any piece of technology. And that's the market said, we need a 5.5-inch phone. I like the battery in a 5.5-inch phone, so I'm keeping it.
So you're probably not going for the new rumored 4-inch phone, huh?
No, as much as my little hands would love it, I think that there are too many trade-offs, too many things that are just a slightly lower end than I am used to in my Apple products right now. And right. I don't want to make that. It would be a downgrade for me.
Yeah. And I repeat, we don't know yet if one is really coming. That's
it is. It is a rumor at this
point. But it's a pretty persistent rumor.
Yes. And if the rumored date of March 15th for the Apple event is in fact true, that's on my birthday. So I will be totally stoked to have an Apple. It would be the first Apple event to occur on my birthday.
Well, let's hope that happens.
I hope so too. It would be a good 31st birthday present.
Absolutely. I think we could have an Allison birthday Apple event podcast.
Maybe. That'd be awesome.
That would be great. So just to kind of finish out with Sonos, they, at least as I understand it, and you know a whole lot more about it than I do, but they don't have all that many products. They have three sets of speakers, or three different models of speakers, I should say. I believe they call it a Play 1, a Play 3, and a Play 5.
Yeah, we have two sets. We have two of the Play 1 speakers. The Play 3 speakers are a little bit larger. I think the 1, the 3, and the 5 refer to the number of tweeters in the speakers. I think. I could be totally wrong. But
you could at any be rate, right.
I could be right. The 5s, in terms of the standalone speakers, are the biggest. Then there's a Sonos subwoofer that you can also get called the Sonos Sub. And then there is the Sonos Playbar, which works with a TV, but I think it can also be utilized as a Sonos speaker. Like if you were playing something through your Sonos, one of your other Sonos speakers, you could also play it through the bar itself. I think, again, I have not tried it.
Yeah, you can.
But what I would ultimately like to do is have our Play 1 speakers in the bedroom, and then have two Play 5 speakers, have a Sonos sub and the Sonos soundbar, which is going to be tremendously expensive to make this happen. So I don't know when it's going to happen. It will eventually, though.
Well, I mean, it's all relative. You say tremendously expensive. It's going to cost you a couple thousand, $2,500 maybe to do all that. But compared to how much we used to pay for surround sound systems and receivers and wired speakers and all that stuff. It really isn't that bad. It's honestly cheaper than what we paid for our current sound system in our house here. And it's, oh, what, 14 years old.
Yeah.
But we actually paid more for it back then than what you would pay for essentially the same setup with Sonos, but you don't have any wires involved except for plugging the Sonos into power. And you don't have any receivers or amplifiers or anything else involved because that's all built into the speaker and you're getting your data, your music from the internet. So it's today's modern stereo system, if you will.
Right. Yeah. And the great thing about it is that they're constantly adding services all the time, new services, new avenues of accessing more material. And that's all a part of what you get when you get the Sonos speakers. Of course, if the services that they're adding require a subscription, then you have to pay for those individually. But a lot of times you get a very generous trial period when you're signing up through a new service through Sonos. So it's really good.
Yeah. Sonos has been around actually for a while, so I think they've really staked their claim in this space. I'm confident they'll be around, and I think honestly adding Apple Music will help them quite a bit, and they've already started advertising the fact that they are partnering with Apple, you know, with Apple Music. And they even hired someone to do a pretty interesting study, which demonstrated that people are generally happier, more satisfied, more content when they listen to music aloud with other people. And also, they determined during this study that people who listen to music aloud together engage in more sexual activity. Mm-hmm. So why not get a Sonos?
Yeah, it's good for every part of your life.
That's right. That's right. I thought that was kind of a fascinating study. And
that is.
From what little bit I read about it, you know, it seemed like it was legit pretty well done. So Sonos is really up in their game, I think, when it comes to trying to get their products out there. The last hardware that I wanted to mention was I did get a new pair of Aftershocks bone conduction headphones. And these are interesting because they are continuing along their Bluetooth line of bone conduction headphones. And so the controls and the interface is pretty similar, almost identical to the Blues 2, which they had out last year. But these headphones are called Trex Titanium because they're made of titanium, which makes them very, very light and very thin. The band that goes around behind your head is extremely thin and extremely flexible, so it makes it really comfortable. The band is covered with a little bit of rubber kind of feeling material, but it's very soft, which is just covering the titanium metal there. But these are the clearest Aftershocks that I've seen, and believe me, I've tried all of them because I love the Aftershocks headphones for multitasking. I wear them constantly listening to podcasts while I'm doing other things around the house where I need to be able to hear my environment around me. I even wear them to practice guitar and play a podcast in the background while I'm practicing scales and things like that. And I would say that these are my favorite pair of Aftershocks. And it's interesting, every year they've seemed like they've refined their design, made them a little better. These are comfortable. They sound good. I still don't recommend the Aftershocks for music. They're not terrible, but they're not as good as a regular pair of decent earbuds or earphones would be for music. But they sound good. They're clear. They're loud enough. They pair well, and the Bluetooth connection, for me at least, has been very solid. So I don't know whether you've had any experience with the new Aftershocks or not.
The new ones, I have the Blues too, and I like them. The sound quality, I'm glad to hear, has improved in these new ones, because that was my biggest gripe with the Aftershocks, was that their sound quality I didn't feel was quite up to scratch. And I was concerned about sound bleeding too. Do you find that has lessened?
Supposedly it has. I need to ask Vicky if she's hearing anything coming through the headphones. Supposedly they've done a better job of isolating the sounds. They've changed the little part of the headphone that sits on your cheekbone a little bit. So it's a smaller piece, seems like more directional piece, sending the sound right in that area on your face. But when I first got them, I thought, oh wow, these, you know, sound about the same as the Blues too. But then I kept experimenting and switching them back and forth, and I came to realize actually the Trex are a good bit clearer sounding than the Blues too, especially when you're listening to a podcast or a radio broadcast with spoken audio, something like that. They're just clearer to me. So they have made some improvements, and I don't know that I'll continue to buy every pair of Aftershocks that comes along. There probably has to come a slowdown somewhere, but I would give the Trex Titanium a positive review.
Yeah, considering that they're that much light as you say, I might give them a try.
And they do come for the first time with a really nice small leather case with a nice zipper and a nice little carrying strap built onto the case. And the case is really thin, and you would swear that these headphones will not fit in the case, but they will. They kind of bend enough with the case as it closes down that they will fit. And it doesn't, you know, it's not, doesn't put terrible pressure on them or anything, but they'll bend just enough that the case zips up just fine, and it's very cool. So
nice.
So I like that about the Trex Titanium. One thing that has come up in the news, which has been kind of controversial and stirred up a lot of discussion, at least on several of the Apple podcasts and blogs that I follow, is this whole situation about some people who take their phones to an unauthorized Apple repair shop to get their screen replaced, and sometimes to get their home button replaced. But inadvertently, when you replace a home button, apparently, if you don't either know how to possibly, or maybe don't have the codes that you need, I'm not sure exactly what happens, but somehow the secure enclave, which stores Apple Pay information, stores your fingerprint for the Touch ID information, things like that, doesn't end up getting reconnected to your home button. And so when you update your phone the next time, which I guess is the point where Apple checks to see if this is a valid connection between the home button, Touch ID, and the secure enclave. Apparently, the phone just gets bricked and it doesn't work anymore. And there's even been some controversy about what happens then when you take it to an Apple authorized dealer or Apple store. Some people have said Apple took care of it for them. Some people have said they've been told, well, you just have to buy a new phone. I don't know quite what all is fact and fiction here, but it is an interesting controversy. And of course, some people have said, well, Apple's just doing this to try to force people to go to an Apple store where it'll cost you more as opposed to going to someone in your local community who can supposedly repair your phone.
I have some rather strong opinions about this. And before I say them, I don't want to offend anybody because I realize that there are geeks in the Apple community who want to do their own repairs and who want to save money by fixing things themselves. Get certified, whatever certification you need, whatever background check you need or whatever in order to have access to this secure enclave. If you want to be a person who fixes Apple devices, whether that would be for yourself or for other people, get Apple's blessing and then this won't be an issue because Apple isn't saying that you can't go anywhere but an Apple store. They're not saying that you can't go to someone in the community that might be more local to you than the nearest Apple store to fix your home button, to fix your screen. They're saying that that person needs to be Apple certified, needs to be approved by Apple in order to do this. And really, when you think about it, if you're going to trust your phone, your Touch ID, and potentially all of your secure information that we all store on our phones nowadays to someone, wouldn't you want them to be blessed by Apple? Wouldn't you want them to be certified? I know I would. Personally, for me, if something breaks on my phone, I'm just going to take it to my local Apple store because it's four blocks away. So it makes sense for me to do that. However, if I were in a new location or somewhere where there wasn't an Apple store as conveniently located, I would do my research and make sure that whoever I was taking it to was Apple certified so that I could be sure that what I was paying for, even if I had to end up paying a little bit more, because, you know, oftentimes with these folks who fix these types of things, you get what you pay for. And when it's cheap and when it's too good to be true, it's usually because it is. We don't get into Apple products and buy into the Apple ecosystem to have potential security flaws thrown at us. We go into the Apple ecosystem because it is secure, because it is an environment where we feel that our data and our information can be kept safely. And therefore, the people who deal with these devices need to be trustworthy and have a certain level of connection and approval from Apple in order to be able to handle my phone. And that's just my opinion about it. And I'm sorry for people who have gone to resellers that aren't approved by Apple and have gotten this error 53 message, but you kind of get what you paid for. You got what you paid for. And sometimes when you break your phone to that extent and you, in many cases, for some people, I would imagine, violate their Apple Care or any other warranty that they would have, then what else do you expect? Of course, Apple's not going to want to give you another phone for free. You basically told Apple, I wasn't going to go through your process and do what is required by you in order to make sure this is done safely. Sorry, I broke my phone. Give me a new one. No, sorry. You don't get that.
Some people have argued, well, okay, Error 53 should just disable Touch ID and not brick the phone. And I can see that side of it to some degree, but I think there's probably some of this, at least as far as security goes, and maybe even how this all works, that probably for security reasons, Apple isn't talking about. There's got to be some reason why, if they detect this enclave isn't properly paired with Touch ID, there's got to be some reason that it bricks the phone.
Right, because on the surface, being an outsider of Apple who does not know the technical reasons why it may need to be bricked, if I just looked at it on that surface level, I might say, yeah, why not just disable the Touch ID? However, we don't know the many layered reasons of why Apple has to do this in order to maintain security for everybody.
Yeah, I'm convinced that when Apple says that they are serious about security, that they have really demonstrated that they are, because Apple Pay and Touch ID is, without question, the most secure system of its kind that has been developed so far. There's just nothing else like it out there. It is interesting that apparently the way this works, it doesn't actually take effect until you do an update and your phone gets authenticated with the Apple servers. That's when this error 53 shows up. And that seems a little not odd to me. I mean, I can see how it could work that way, but it does seem like that leaves your phone a little bit vulnerable. It's been tampered with, essentially, but it's not going to reveal that until the next time you update. So it'll be interesting to see if Apple makes some changes or comments on this or exactly what they ultimately do about it. But I agree with you. I would rather be erring on the side of making sure that my device is secure than erring on the side of anybody can fix it and it'll be fine. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, if you want anybody can fix it and it'll be fine, go with, get an Android. That's just how I feel.
Okay, fair enough. There is some interesting new software coming around, especially if you're a podcaster. And if you're interested in doing a lot of recordings, maybe demos, especially of voiceover, I would recommend you take a look at Loopback from Rogue Amoeba, which will let you do all that stuff. And Garth from iBlind Tech has done a really nice demo of Loopback, which I will link to in the show notes. And also, if you're into podcasting, there is a new app for the Mac that allows you to insert chapter markers into your podcast. And most podcatching clients, at least the popular ones like Downcast and Overcast, not Apple's podcast client, but most of the third-party ones that I'm familiar with will let you navigate a podcast, allow you to jump from section to section or chapter to chapter if the podcast has been marked up that way. And I may mark up a few of ours that way, just with different markers at the important topic changes, for example, and see whether you all like that, see whether it makes any difference for anybody, or maybe nobody will care. Not that many people use that system. I know Adam Christensen still does with the MacCast, and I believe Dave and John do on the Mac Geek Gab, but I think maybe more people potentially will start doing it now that there's an easy way to do it with this podcast chapter software that's available in the Mac App Store. It's $19.95, so it's for $20 you can start adding chapter markers to your podcast if you want to. And Jonathan Mosen did a really nice demo of this app on Apple Viz, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. But that's about all that's going on. I think we're just kind of waiting for this rumored event on Allison's birthday. Hope it happens. But short of that, I think we've kind of covered it for this time. How about you?
I think so. I can't really think of anything that we haven't touched on that's really important. I'll be interested to check out those demos, because both of those apps are something I think I could use, particularly Loopback.
Yeah, loopback is giving us a way to set things up to record your microphone and voiceover at the same time. And prior to loopback, we mostly used an app called Soundflower, which was a public domain application that was not actively being developed and updated. And I think its days were numbered as Apple keeps changing their operating systems. But I think loopback will be up to date and around with us for a long time. And it's totally accessible with voiceover. So there's really no reason why podcasters can't do demos and recordings and capture whatever audio you want to capture for those demos and recordings. It really does work well.
Excellent.
All right, you all. Thank you so much for listening. If you've stuck with us this long, I appreciate that grit and determination. Allison, if they want to comment on any of this crazy talk that we have spewed forth here, is there any way for people to get in touch with us?
There absolutely is. If you have comments, good, bad, or indifferent, please do send them to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@dr-carter.com.
Good job on that email address.
Got it right the first time.
Absolutely. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening, and take care of yourselves until next time. This is Robert, one of the tech doctors, saying so long for now.
And this is Allison, the other tech doctor, saying bye, everyone.